maidens following a cotillion of the wizard's army, garrisoned near Dragon Cupboard. He mentioned the massacre at Far Applerue and the heavy taxation on farm crops. The last straw, he said, as far as Nessie was concerned anyway, was the callow despoiling by the wizard soldiers of simple country meeting houses. Unlikely last straw, said Elphaba. Isn't the back room of a colliery as holy a place to pray as a meeting house? I mean, according to teaching. Well, teaching, said Frex. He shrugged. Such distinctions were beyond him now. Nessie was incensed and communicated her outrage, and before she knew it, the spark had been thrown out and the tinder caught. Within a week of her firing off a furious letter to the Emperor Wizard himself, a dangerous and seditious act, the revolutionary fever had coalesced around her. It happened right here in the forecourt of Colwyn Grounds. It was magnificent, and you'd have guessed Nessie was groomed for treason. She addressed the senior men among the farming communities, both near and far, and kept her religious agenda in check, sensibly, I think. So her appeal for their support was overwhelmingly answered. There was a unanimous approval for secession. "Papa's gone pragmatic in his old age," Elphaba observed with some surprise. "But how did you slip through the border patrols?" he asked. "Things being what they are, hotting up, as they say."
"I just flew right through, a little black bird at night time," she answered, smiling at him and touching his hand. It was glazed and mottled pink, like a lake lobster on the boil. "But what I don't know, Papa, is why you called me here. What do you expect me to do?"
"I had thought you might join your sister in her seat of authority," he said, with the simple-minded hope of one whose family has been too long apart. "I know who you are, Fabula. I doubt you have much changed over the years. I know your cunning and your conviction. I also know that Nessie is at the mercy of her religious voices, and she could slip and undo the terrible good she is helping to create right now by being a focal figure for resistance. If that happens, it will not go well for her."
So I am to be a whipping girl, thought Elphaba. I am to be a first line of defense. Her pleasure evaporated.
"And it will not go well for them, the eager supporters," Frex said, waving a hand to indicate most of Munchkinland. His face sagged. His smile was an effort, too, she thought coolly, and his shoulders fell. "They have had more than a generation of gentle dictatorship from our glorious wizard scoundrel. Oh, even I forget. We're now in the free state of Munchkinland. These farmers surely underestimate the size of the eventual retaliation. In fact, Shell has found from reliable sources that the stockpiles of grain in the Emerald City are massive, and we can be left for some time without needing to be overrun. Short of routing some divisions of soldiers across the border and jailing some drunken hooligans, this has been a most genteel disengagement so far. We are deluded into believing we are safe. I mean, Nessie is deluded too, I think. You, I have always felt, had a clearer mind about you. You can help her prepare. You can provide the balance and the support."
"I always did that, Papa," she said, "in childhood and at college. Now I am told she can stand up for herself."
"You've heard of my precious shoes," he said. "I bought them from a decrepit crone, and then I retooled them for Nessa with my own hands, using skills in glass and metal that I had once learned from Turtleheart. I made them to give her a sense of beauty, but I didn't expect them to be enchanted by someone else. I am not sorry they are,
but Nessa now thinks she needs no one to help her stand or help her govern. She listens less than ever. In some ways, I think those shoes are dangerous.
"I wish you had made them for me, Papa," she said in a quiet voice.
"You didn't need them. You had your voice, your intensity, even your cruelty as your armor."
"My cruelty?" she reared back.
"Oh, you were a fiendish little thing," said Frex.
"But so what? Children grow into and out of themselves. You were a terror when you first were around other children. You only calmed down when we began to travel, and you got to hold the baby. It was Nessa Rose who tamed you, you know. You have her to thank. She was holy and blessed, even from the day she was born. Even as an infant, she soothed your wildness with her obvious need. You don't remember that, I suppose." Elfie wasn't able to remember. She wasn't able to think about all that. Even the idea of being cruel was slipping from her. Instead, she was trying to feel fondness toward her father, despite the exhaustion of being commandeered to be a second lieutenant once again in service of dear, needy Nessa Rose. She concentrated on her father's concern for the citizens of Munchkinland, ever a pastoral sensibility his. Though rejecting his theology, she adored him for his commitment.
"I must hear more about Turtle Heart one day," she said in a light voice. "But now I suppose I should go greet my sister. And I will think about what you say, Papa. I can't imagine being part of a governmental troika with you and Nessa Rose, or a committee, should Shell be involved too. But I'll suspend judgment for a while. And Shell, Papa, how is he?"
"Behind enemy lines, so they say," Frex answered, as she got up to leave. "He is a foolhardy boy, and will be among the first casualties once this really gets going. He resembles you in some ways."
"He's gone green?" she asked, amused.
"He's stubborn as sin stains," he answered.
Nessa Rose was secluded in an upstairs parlor, conducting her morning meditation. Frex saw that Elphaba was given license to wander about the house and domain. After all, in another configuration of events, Elphaba could have been, or could yet become, the eminent Throp, the eminence of the East, the nominated head of the Free State of Munchkinland. Frex watched his green daughter amble down marble corridors, dragging her broom like a charwoman, gazing at the ormolu, the damask, the fresh flowers, the servants in livery, the portraits. He felt, as always, a twinge of pain deep in his breast for the hidden and unknowable things that he had done wrong in raising her. But he was glad that she was here at last. Elphaba found her way into a private chapel at the end of a hall of polished mahogany. It was Baroque rather than ancient, and it was in the midst of being redecorated. Nessa Rose must have ordered the frescoes to be whitewashed. Perhaps the succulent images would distract people from their meditative tasks. Elfie sat on a bench on the side, amidst buckets of limestone wash and paintbrushes and ladders. She did not pretend to pray, though she felt very uneasy about this whole thing. She trained her gaze to focus her mind on a huge section still boasting its images. It featured several rotund angels levitating with the aid of sizable wings. Their garments had been cut to accommodate the anatomical irregularity she saw. They were rather full-bodied dames, but the wings weren't bulging with straining arteries nor snapping at the tip. The artist had considered the optimal length and breadth of wing required to hoist ample ladies aloft. The formula looked to be about 3 times wing length to the length of arm, corrected perhaps to account for the portliness. If you could sweep your way to the other land on wings, what about on a broom, she wondered, and realized she must be very tired. Usually she'd cut off senseless speculation about unionist nonsense, like an afterlife, a beyond, an other land. I should remember my lessons from that life sciences course, she thought. All the devastating borders of knowledge Dr. Dillamond was about to cross. I almost understood some of it. I could stitch wings onto Chistery. He could join me in flight. What a lark. She rose and went to find her sister. Nessa Rose was less surprised to see Elphaba than Elfie would have guessed. Perhaps, Elfie considered, it was because Nessa had become used to being the center of attention. Then again, she had always been the center of attention. "Darling Elfie," she said, looking up from a pair of identical books some attendant had laid out next to each other, so she could read 4 pages without calling for someone to turn the page. "Give us a kiss." "Oh, there then," Elfie said, obliging. "How are you, Nessie? You look fine." Nessa Rose stood in her beautiful shoes and smiled brilliantly. "The grace of the unnamed God gives me strength as ever," she said. But Elphaba could not be annoyed. "You have risen, and I don't just mean to your feet," she said. "History has chosen you for a role, and you've accepted it. I'm proud of you."
"You needn't be proud," said Nessa Rose, "but thank you, dear. I thought you'd probably come. Did Father drag you here to take care of me?"
"No one dragged me here, but Papa did right."
"So all those years in solitude and political turmoil brings you out at last. Where were you?"
"Here and there."
"You know we thought you'd died," said Nessa Rose. "Drape that shawl around my shoulders and fix it with a pin, will you, so I needn't call a maid? I mean that awful, awful time when you left me alone in Shiz. I am still furious with you about it. I just remembered." She curled her lip prettily. Elphaba was glad to see she possessed at least a residual sense of humor.
"We were all young then, and perhaps I was wrong," said Elfie. "It didn't do you any lasting harm, anyway, at least not so I can see."
"I had to put up with Madame Morrible all by myself for 2 more years. Glinda was a help for a while, then she graduated and went on. Nanny was my salvation, but she was old even then. She's gone on to you lately, hasn't she?"
"Well, back then I felt horribly alone. Only my faith saw me through."
"Well, faith will do that," said Elfie, "if you've got it." "You speak as one still living in the shadowland of doubt."
"In fact, I think we have more important things to discuss than the state of my soul, or lack thereof. You have a revolution on your hands. Sorry, I guess I've gotten out of the habit. And you're the resident commander general. Congratulations."
"Oh, tiresome events of the distracting world, yes, yes," said Nessa Rose. "Look, it's just beautiful out there in the gardens. Let's go walk for a bit and get some air. You look green about the gills."
"All right, I deserve that.
And there's plenty of time to go into diplomatic matters. I have a meeting in a little while, but there's time for a stroll. You should get to know this place. Let me show it to you."
Elphaba could only get Nessa Rose's attention for small snatches of time. However dismissive of the demands of leadership, Nessa Rose was clear-headed about her schedule and spent hours preparing for meetings. And at first the discussion was frivolous. Family memories, school days. Elfie was impatient to get around to the meat of the matter here,
but Nessa Rose wouldn't be rushed. Sometimes she let Elfie sit in when she held audiences with citizens. Elfie wasn't entirely pleased with what she saw. One afternoon, an old woman from some hamlet in the corn basket came in. She made obeisance in a most disgusting and obsequious manner, and Nessa Rose seemed to shine back at her with glory. The woman complained that she had a maid who, having fallen in love with a woodcutter, wanted to leave her service to get married. But the old woman had already given 3 sons to the new local militia for defense, and she and the maid were all the labor available to bring in the crops. If the maid ran off with her woodcutter, the crops would spoil and she would be ruined. "And all for the sake of liberty," she concluded bitterly.
"Well, what do you want me to do about it?" said the Eminence of the East.
"I can give you 2 sheep and a cow," said the woman.
"I have livestock," said Nessa Rose, but Elphaba interrupted and said,
"Did you say sheep? A cow? You mean animals?" "My very own animals," the woman replied proudly. "How do you come to own animals?" Elphaba asked, her teeth clenched. "Are animals no more than chattel now in Munchkin Land?"
"Elfie, please," said Nessa Rose quietly.
"What will you take to release them?" demanded Elfie in a passion. "I already said, do something about this woodcutter."
"What do you have in mind?" interrupted Nessa Rose, displeased that her sister was usurping her role as arbiter of justice.
"I brought you his axe. I thought you might bewitch it and cause it to kill him."
"Fie," said Elphaba, but Nessa Rose said, "Oh, well, that wouldn't be very nice."
"Very nice?" Elfie said. "No, indeed, it wouldn't be very nice, Nessie." "Well, you're the legal answer around here," said the old woman stoutly. "What do you suggest?"
"I might bewitch his axe and let it slip," said Nessa Rose thoughtfully. "Just enough, perhaps, to cut off his arm. I know from experience that a person without an arm isn't as desirable to the opposite sex as one fully armed."
"Fair enough," said the woman. "But if it doesn't work, I'll come back and you'll do more for the same price. Sheep and a cow don't come cheap around here, you know."
"Nessa Rose,
you're not a witch."
"No, I don't believe it," said Elfie.
"You don't do spells, of all things."
"The righteous person can work miracles in the honor of the unnamed God," said Nessa Rose calmly. "Show me that axe if you've brought it."
The old woman held forward a woodcutter's axe, and Nessa Rose knelt down near it as if she were praying. It was an odd, even a frightening thing, to see that narrow, armless body able to lean forward, unaided and off balance, and then, when the spell was through, able to right itself. "Those are some shoes," thought Elfie soberly, bitterly. "Glinda has got some power in her, for all her social dazzle, or maybe the power comes from the love of our father for his Nessie, or some combination. And if Nessa Rose isn't pulling the wool over this old biddy's eyes, she's become a sorceress, too, by whatever name she chooses to call it."
"You are a witch," said Elphaba again. She couldn't help it.
This, perhaps, was a mistake, as the old woman was just thanking Nessa Rose for her efforts. "I'll bring the animals by the barn out back," she said. "They're tethered in town."
"Animals? Tethered?" exclaimed Elfie, seething.
"Thank you, Miss Eminence," said the old woman. "The Eminence of the East. Or should I call you the Witch of the East?" She grinned toothily, having gotten her way, and went out the door carrying the enchanted axe over her shoulder, the way a strapping young lumberjack would do.
They weren't to be alone again for a while. Elphaba went prowling around the stable and sheds until she found an attendant who could point her toward the two sheep and the cow. They were in a pen with clean straw, each one facing a different corner, chewing in abstraction. "You're the new animals, brought here by that old vengeful fiend," said Elphaba. The cow looked over, as if unaccustomed to being addressed. The sheep made no sign of having understood.
"What's your beef?"
said the cow, in a dark humor. "I've been living in the Vincas," said Elfie. "There aren't many animals there. At one time I was an agitator in the animal rights grassroots sweep. I don't really know how things stand for Munchkinlander animals now. What can you tell me?"
"I can tell you to mind your own business," said the cow.
"And the sheep?"
"These sheep can tell you nothing. They've gone dumb."
"Are they sheep? Does that happen?"
"They talk about humans becoming vegetables, or nuts, or even fruits," said the cow. "But they don't mean it literally. Sheep don't become sheep. They become mute sheep. They don't really need to be discussed here, as if they're not listening, by the way."
"Of course. My apologies," she said to the sheep, one of whom blinked balefully. To the cow, she added, "I'd rather call you by your name."
"I've given up using my name in public," said the cow. "It's not afforded me any individual rights to have an individual name. I reserve it for my private use."
"I understand that," said Elphaba. "I feel the same. I'm just the witch now."
"Her Eminence herself."
A gummy rope of spittle dropped from the cow's jaw. "I'm flattered. I didn't know you called yourself witch. I thought that was just a nasty backfield nickname. The Witch of the East." "Well, no, I'm her sister. I suppose I'm the Witch of the West, if you will," she grinned. "In fact, I didn't know she was so disliked." The cow had blundered.
"Surely I meant no disregard to your family," she said. "I should just keep my mouth closed and concentrate on my cud. The thing is, I'm in shock. To be sold in exchange for a witch's spell. There's nothing wrong with that woodcutter. Oh, I've got ears, I have, though they forget. And the thought of a warm-hearted simpleton like Nick Chopper coming to harm through a witch's spell, and I part of the barter cost, well, it's hard to imagine how much lower one could sink in life."
"I've come to free you," Elfie said.
"By whose authority?"
The cow snorted suspiciously. "I told you I'm the sister of the Eminent Throp, the Eminence of the East." She amended herself. "The Witch of the East. It's my prerogative here."
"And free to go where? To do what?" said the cow. "We get from here to Lower Muckslop and be roped in again, subjected to slavery under the wizard and catechisms under the Eminent Throp. We don't exactly blend in with those creepy little Munchkinlander humans."
"You've gone a bit dour," said Elphaba.
"Haven't you ever heard of a mad cow?" she answered. "Sweetheart, my udder is sore from their daily yanking. I am tapped for milk morning and night. I won't even go into what it's like to be mounted by a... well, just never mind. But worst, my children have been fattened on milk and slaughtered for veal. I could hear their cries from the abattoir. They didn't even bother to move me out of hearing range."
Here she turned her head to the wall, and the sheep came up on either side of her, pressing like a living pair of warm bookends against her lower sides and underbelly. Elphaba said, "I can't be sorrier or more ashamed. Look, I was working with Dr. Dillamond. Have you heard of him? In Chiz, years ago. I went to the wizard himself to protest what was happening.
Oh, the wizard doesn't show himself to the likes of us, said the cow, after she had regained her composure. I don't feel like talking any more. Everybody's on your side until they want something from you. The eminent Nessa Rose has probably brought us in order to impress us into some religious ceremonial procession. My silken flanks tarted up with garlands or the like. And we all know what happens next.
Now you must be wrong in that, said the witch. I do object. Nessa Rose is a strict unionist. They don't go in for blood sacrifice.
Times change, said the cow, and she's got a population of ill-educated, nervous subjects to pacify. What, pray tell, works better than ritual slaughter?
But however could it come to this, said the witch, assuming you're telling the truth. This is farming country. You ought to be well established here.
Animals in pens have lots of time to develop theories, said the cow. I've heard more than one clever creature draw a connection between the rise of TikTokism and the erosion of traditional animal labor. We weren't beasts of burden, but we were good, reliable laborers. If we were made redundant in the workforce, it was only a matter of time before we'd be socially redundant, too. Anyway, that's one theory. My own feeling is that there is real evil abroad in the land. The wizard sets the standard for it, and the society follows suit like a bunch of sheep. Forgive the slanderous reference, she said, nodding to her companions in the pen. It was a slip.
Elphaba threw open the gate of the pen. Come on, you're free, she said. What you make of it is your own affair. If you turn it down, it's on your own heads.
It's on our own heads if we walk out, too. Do you think a witch who would charm an axe to dismember a human being would pause over a couple of sheep and an annoying old cow?
But this might be your only chance, Elphaba cried. The cow moved out, and the sheep followed.
We'll be back, she said. This is an exercise in your education, not ours. Mark my words, my rump'll be served up rare on your finest Dixie House porcelain dinner plates before the year is out. She mooed a last remark. I hope you choke. And, tail swishing the flies, she meandered away.
"An ambassador from the Glickus, darling," Nessa Rose said, when Elphaba demanded a meeting. "Really, I can't turn her away. She's come to discuss mutual defense pacts in the event that the Glickus secedes next. She thinks there are agents trailing her family, and she needs to leave on her return journey tonight. But we'll dine together, just like old times, you, me, and my server."
Elphaba had no choice but to while away another afternoon. She located Frex and persuaded him to go for a stroll out beyond the ornamental ponds and pristine lawns, where the woods came up to the back edge of Colwyn grounds. He walked so stiffly, so slowly, it was torture. She was a strider, but she kept herself in check.
"How do you find your sister?" he asked her. After all these years, much changed?
She was always confident in her way, Elfie said reservedly.
I never thought so, and I don't now, Freck said. But I think it was a good act, and it's gotten better.
What really did you ask me to come here for, Papa? Elphaba said. I haven't much time, you know. You must be frank.
You would make a smarter eminence than Nessie, he said. And it's your birthright. Yes, I know the strict rules of title inheritance weren't important to your mother. I just think that the people of Munchkin Land would do better with you at the helm. Nessa is too devout, if such a thing exists. Too devout to be a central figure in public life, anyway.
This may be the only respect in which I take after my mother, Elphaba said, but an inherited position is of no interest to me, and it carries no weight at all that I'm the rightful eminence. I've long ago abdicated my position in the family in that respect. Nessa Rose has every right to abdicate hers, and then Shell can be located to stand in. Or better yet, the foolish custom can be abolished and let the Munchkinlanders govern themselves to death.
Nobody ever suggested a leader isn't just as much a scapegoat as a lowly peon, said Frex. Anyway, it's possible. But I'm talking about leadership, not about rank and privilege. I'm talking about the nature of the times we live in, and the job that needs to be done. Fabula, you were always the more capable sibling. Shell is a madcap cut-up, currently playing secret agent, and Nessie is a bruised little girl.
Oh, please, she said in disgust. Isn't it time to get over that?
She hasn't, he said, hurt. Do you see her wrapped in some lover's arms? Do you see her bearing her own children, engaging in life in a way that makes sense? She hides behind her devotion the way a terrorist hides behind his ideals. He saw her flinch at this and paused.
I have known terrorists capable of love, she said evenly. And I have known good Monts, unmarried and childless, doing charity for stricken people.
Have you known Nessa to have an adult bond with anyone other than the unnamed god?
You're one to talk, she said. You had your wife and your children, but they came lower on the order of priorities than quadlings waiting to be converted.
I did what had to be done, he said rigidly. I won't be lectured by my daughter.
Well, I won't be lectured by you about my everlasting duties to Nessie. I gave her my childhood. I got her going at Shiz. She's made her life the way she wants it, and she still has choice and free will even now. And so do her subjects, who can depose her and cut off her head if her prayers get in their way.
She is a rather powerful woman, Freck said sadly.
Elfie glanced sideways at him, and for the first time she saw him as feckless, the kind of old man that Irgi, if he survived, would grow to be, constantly pawing at the edge of events, reacting instead of acting, mourning the past and praying for the future instead of stirring up the present.
How did she get so powerful? She asked, trying to be kind. She had two good parents.
He didn't answer this.
They walked on and came out of the woods along the edge of a cornfield. A couple of farmhands were repairing a fence and erecting a scarecrow.
Afternoon, Brother Frexbar, they said, doffing their caps.
They looked a little askance at Elphaba. When she and her father had continued out of earshot, she said,
They were wearing a little talisman or something on their tunics. Did you see it? It looked like a small straw dolly or something.
Oh, yes. The straw man, he sighed. Another pagan custom that had almost gone underground, and then was revived during the great drought. Ignorant field workers wear a straw man as a charm against the pests of crops, drought, crows, insects, rot. Once upon a time, there was a tradition of human sacrifice about it.
He paused to catch his breath and wipe his face.
Our family friend, Turtleheart, the quadling, he was butchered right here in Colwyn Grounds on the day that Nessa Rose was born. An itinerant dwarf and a huge
tick-tock entertaining clock were making the circuit that year, and providing a conduit for the ugliest of human inclinations. We arrived here just in time for Turtleheart to be nabbed. I've never forgiven myself for not seeing what was about to happen. But your mother was in her labor, and we'd been run out of town. I wasn't thinking clearly enough all the way around things. Elphaba had heard all this before. Even so. "You were in love with him," she said, to make it easier. "We both were. We shared him," said Frex. "Your mother and I did. It was a lifetime ago, and I don't know why anymore. I don't think I knew why then. I haven't loved anyone else since your mother died, except, of course, my children." "What a brutal history of sacrifices," she said. "I was just talking to a cow who expects to be a blood victim. Is that possible?"
"The more civilized we become, the more horrendous our entertainments," said Frex.
"And it'll never change, or will it? I remember the etymology of the word Oz, at least as proposed at a lecture by our head, Madame Morrible. She said that academics were inclined to locate the root of the term in the Gilliconese cognate ous, which carries freights of meaning about growth, development, power, generation. Even ooze, with its distant companion noun virus, is thought to belong to the same general family. The older I get, the more accurate this derivation seems to be.
And yet the poet of the Ossiad calls it land of green abandon, land in endless leaf.
Poets are just as responsible for empire building as any other professional hacks.
Sometimes I would give anything to get away from here, but I dread the thought of a trip across the deadly sands.
That's only a legend, said Elfie. Papa, you taught me that the sands are no more deadly than these fields. That reminds me of the other theory, that Oz is related to the word oasis. What the nomadic peoples of the north thought of Gilliken, time beyond thinking, when Oz was first discovered and settled. Now look, Papa, you needn't go so far. The Vincus is nearly another country. Why don't you come back with me?
I would love to, honey, he said. But how could I leave Nessa Rose? I never could.
Even if she's Turtleheart's daughter and not yours, she said stingingly, because stung.
Especially if that, he answered.
And Elphaba saw that by not knowing for sure if Nessa Rose had been fathered by himself or by Turtleheart, Frex had decided in some sub-rational way that she was the daughter of them both. Nessa Rose was the proof of their brief union. Theirs, and obviously Melina's as well. It didn't matter how crippled Nessa Rose was. She would always be more than Elphaba. Always. She would always mean more. Elphaba and Nessa Rose sat in Nessa's bedchamber. A handmaid served some soup made of cow's stomach. Elfie, not normally squeamish, couldn't eat it. The maid neatly spooned tiny portions into Nessie's mouth. "I'm not going to beat around the bush," Nessa Rose said. "I would like you to join me here as a sister-at-arms to lead my circle of advisers and to manage in my absence if I should travel." "I have no love of Munchkin Land, from what I've seen so far," said Elphaba. "The people are cruel and impressed by charades. The pomp of this place is oppressive, and I do believe you're sitting on a powder keg."
"All the more reason you should stay and help me," said Nessa Rose. "Weren't we raised up to expect a life of service?"
"Your shoes have made you strong," said Elfie. "I didn't know shoes could do that." I don't think you need me. Don't lose those shoes, though. She thought, Your shoes give you an unnatural balance. You look like a serpent standing on its tail.
Surely you remember them from before?
Yes, but I hear Glinda amplified them with a magic spell or something.
Oh, that Glinda, what a card!
Nessie swallowed and smiled.
Well, you can have the shoes, my dear, over my dead body. I'll rewrite my will and leave them to you. Though what they would do for you I can hardly imagine. They didn't grow me new arms. Perhaps enchanted shoes won't change the color of your skin, but will make you enticing enough so that it won't matter.
I'm already too old to be that enticing.
Why, you're still in the prime of life, and so am I, said Nessa Rose, laughing. Tell me you've got some romancing man in a vincus yurt or tent or teepee or whatever it is they call home there. Come on.
I have been wondering something ever since I saw you do that spell this morning, Elfie said. The spell over the axe.
Oh, right. Small potatoes, that one.
Do you by any chance remember that time in Shiz when Madame Morrible said she was putting us under a spell? And that we couldn't talk to each other about it?
Go on. Sounds familiar. She was so creepy, wasn't she? A master of tyranny.
She said she had chosen us, me, you, and Glinda, to be adepts, to be agents of someone quite high up, to be sorceresses and, I don't know, secret accomplices. She promised we'd be highly placed and effectual. She made us think we couldn't ever discuss it with one another.
Oh, yes, that. I do remember. What a witch she was.
Well, do you think there's any truth to that? Do you think she had the power to bind us into silence, to make us powerful sorceresses?
She had the power to scare us out of our wits, but we were young and very stupid, as I remember.
I had the feeling at the time that she was in collusion with the wizard, and that she ordered her TikTok thing, Grammatic. The name's just come back to me. Isn't memory odd like that? To kill Dr. Dillamond.
You saw fiends with knives behind every chair. You always did, Nessa Rose said. I don't think that Madame Morrible had any real power. She was a manipulative woman, but her power was very limited. And in our naivete, we saw her as a villain. She was merely full of self-importance.
I wonder. I tried to say something about it afterward. Didn't we all faint?
We were innocent and horribly suggestible, Elfie.
And Glinda's gone on to marry money, as Madame Morrible said.
Is Sir Chuffrey still alive?
If you can call it that, yes. And Glinda is a sorceress, there's no questioning that. But Madame Morrible was merely predicting things to us. She saw our talents, as an educator could be expected to do, and she advised us on how to make the most of them. What's so surprising about that?
She tried to seduce us into a secret service for an unknown master. I'm not inventing this, Nessie.
She knew how to get to you, obviously, by appealing to your sense of conspiracy. I don't remember such alluring nonsense.
Elphaba fell silent. Perhaps Nessie was right. And yet here they were, a dozen years later, two witches, in a manner of speaking. And Glinda a sorceress for the public good. It was enough to make Elfie go back to Kiamo Ko and burn that grimmery, and burn the broom, too, for that matter.
She always reminded Glinda of a carp, said Nessa Rose. Can you really be scared of a fish after all these years?
I saw in a book once a drawing of a lake monster, or a sea monster if you believe in oceans, said Elfie. I may not be sure if monsters exist, but I'd rather live my life in doubt than be persuaded by a real experience of one.
You said much the same thing about the unnamed god once, said Nessa Rose quietly.
Oh, now, please don't start on that. A soul is too valuable to ignore, Elfie.
Well, isn't it good I don't have one, then, so there's no muss, no fuss?
You have a soul. Everyone does.
How about the cow you bartered for today, and the sheep?
I'm not talking about lower orders.
That sort of talk offends me, Nessie. I freed those animals today, you know.
Nessarose shrugged. You have some rights in Colwyn Grounds. I'm not going to walk around prohibiting your little pet missions.
They said some pretty horrible things about how animals are being treated here. I thought it was the Emerald City and Gillikin only. I somehow guessed Munchkin Land, being more rural, would have more common sense.
You know, said Nessie, indicating that the maid should wipe her mouth with a napkin. Once, at a prayer service, I met a soldier. He had lost a limb in a campaign against some restless quadlings. He said every morning he slapped the stump where his arm used to be. He got the blood ringing, and after a few minutes there was a tingling sensation, and he developed a kind of phantom limb. Not all at once, and not in physical form. What he regained was a sense of what it had felt like. It would grow to the elbow, and then his memory, his bodily memory, of limbs in three-dimensional space, would extend, eventually, all the way down to his fingers. Once his phantom limb was in place, mentally, that is, he could face the day as a crippled man. Furthermore, he had better physical balance.
Elphaba, feeling more and more like a real witch, looked at her sister, waiting for the punch.
I tried it for a while. For months, in fact. I had Nanny massage my little knobs there. After much hard work on poor Nanny's part, I began to develop just the beginning of a sense of what it would be like to have arms. It never went very far, until Glinda dazzled up these shoes. Now, I don't know why, maybe they're too tight and my circulation is complaining, after an hour on my feet, I have phantom arms. First time in my life. I can't quite get the feel of fingers.
Phantom limbs, said Elfie. Well, I'm pleased for you.
You know, if you slapped yourself around, spiritually speaking, said Nessarose, you might develop a phantom soul, or something that felt like one. It's a good internal guide, a soul. I suspect you might even recognize that it's not a phantom at all. It's a real one.
That'll do, Nessie, said Elphaba. I don't care to discuss my spiritual trials with you.
Why don't you stay here with me, join my staff, and we can have you baptized, said Nessarose warmly.
Water is profoundly painful to me, as you well know, and I won't discuss it again. I can't pledge allegiance to anything unnamed. It's a sham.
You're condemning yourself to a life of sadness, Nessarose said.
Well, that I'm already familiar with, so at least there's nothing to jump out and surprise me. Elfie threw down her napkin. I can't stay here, Nessie. I can't help you out. I have responsibilities of my own back in the Vincus, which you have shown precious little interest in finding out about. Oh, all right, I know. A revolution has occurred, and you're a new prime minister or something. You surely have a right to be distracted, if anyone does. Either accept the burden of leadership or turn it down, but either way make sure it's your choice in the matter, and not an accident of history. A martyrdom by default. I worry about you, but I can't stay and be your dog's body.
I've just been clumsy and outspoken. Don't expect me to remember how to be sisterly in such a short while.
You've had Shell to practice on all these years, Elphaba said sternly.
Just like that? You're getting up and going?
Nessarose stood too, in that sinuous, unsettling way she had.
After 12 years of separation, we have 3-4 days of reunion, and that's that.
Keep yourself well, Elfie said, and kissed her sister on both cheeks. I know you'll be a good eminence for as long as you want to be.
I shall pray for your soul, promised Nessa Rose.
I shall wait for your shoes, Elfie answered.
On her way out, Elfie thought about going to say goodbye to her father, and then decided against it. She had said to him everything that she could bring herself to say. They had ganged up on her, in the claustrophobic, loving way of families, and she wanted no more of it. Taking the northern route over the Madeleines, she realized she would pass Lake George. She decided to pause there, about halfway home, interested to note that she was actually glad to be heading back. She paced the edge of the lake, looking for Caprice in the pines, but she could not pick it out of the many resort villas that had sprung up since that visit in her youth. But it wasn't the visible terrain she was really seeing. It was the world at large, the character it seemed to have, how it seemed to refer to itself. How could Nessa Rose believe in the unnamed God? Behind every aspect of the world is another aspect of the world. In a sense, wasn't that what Dr. Dillamond had been on about? He had imagined another true foundation of the world, defensible by proofs and experiments. He had figured out how to locate it. But she was not a visionary. Behind the blue and white marbleized paper of the lake, beyond the watered silk of the sky, Elphaba couldn't see any deeper in. Not about the raw material of life, the muscle structure of angels' wings, the capillary action involved in focusing a gimlet gaze, nor about the gooey subjects of the Empyrean. Not about good, if the unnamed God was good. Not about evil, either. For who was in thrall to whom, really? And could it ever be known? Each agent working in collusion and antagonism, like the cold and the sun alike, creating a deadly spear of ice. Was the wizard a charlatan, a fraud, a despot of merely human power and failure? Did he control the adepts, Nessa Rose and Glinda, and an unnamed third, for it surely wasn't Elfie? Or was it only put to him by Madame Morrible that he did, to assuage his obvious ego, his appetite for the semblance of power? And Madame Morrible and Yackel, was there any connection? Were they the same person? Were they harsh divinities, avatars of a power of darkness? Were they poisonous flitches struck from the evil body of the Cumbric witch? Or were they, singly or together, old Cumbricia herself, or such as could be presumed to have survived from the heroic age of mythology into these crabbed, cramped modern days? Did they govern the wizard, jerk him about like a marionette? Who is in thrall to whom? And while you wait to learn, the deadly icicle formed by all opposing forces falls and drives its cold nail into penetrable flesh. She left the pine-needled shores of Lake George in a state of high frustration and energy. Having no confidence to decide about matters of political or theological hierarchy, she felt driven to dig up those old notes she had collected from Dr. Dillamond's study the day after he was murdered. Something concrete under her fingertips, a magnifying lens, a surgical knife, a sterilized probe. Perhaps now she was old enough to understand what he had been getting at. He had been a unionist essentialist. She was a novice atheist. But she still might profit from his work after all this time.
The winds were with her as far as the lower slopes of the Great Kells. Thereafter, she had a harder time, both finding her way and keeping her seat. A number of times she had to dismount and walk. Fortunately, it wasn't very cold, and she came upon small clusters of nomads in the protected vales who kept her heading in the right direction. Still, she was 2 weeks returning, even with the help of a broom. Late in the afternoon, with the sun still hot and high compared to its winter habits, she toiled her way up the last slopes, Kiamo Ko raising its narrow dark profile above her. She felt like a child looking up at the top hat of a very tall gentleman. Eager to avoid ceremony and fuss, she skirted the village. Without the broom, this approach would be nearly impossible. As it was, even the broom seemed to be feeling the effort. She came to a halt in the orchard, made her way to the back door and found it open, which meant the sisters were out flower-picking or some such nonsense. The place was quiet. She grabbed a browning apple from the sideboard and trudged up the steps of her tower without running into anyone. When she passed Nanny's room, she rattled the doorknob and said, "Nanny?"
"Oh!" came a little shriek. "You startled me!"
"May I come in?"
"Just a minute."
There was the sound of furniture being dragged away from the door.
"Well, this is a fine mess, Miss Elphaba, going off and leaving us to be murdered in our beds, or just as likely."
"What are you talking about? Let me in."
"And not saying a word. You had us frantic with worry."
The last piece scraped across the floor, and Nanny flung open the door.
"You hideous, ungrateful woman!"
She fell heavily into her arms and burst into tears.
"Please, I've had enough drama to last me the rest of my life," said Elphaba. "What are you going on about?"
Nanny took some while to calm down. She rummaged through her bag for some smelling salts, pulling out enough little bottles and satchels to set up her own apothecary business. There were blue glass vials, clear pill boxes, snakeskin envelopes of powders and pills, and a beautiful green glass bottle that had an old torn label on it, Miracle ELI. She administered calming agents to herself, and when she could breathe again, she said,
"Well, you know, my dear, you saw, I suppose, that everyone has disappeared."
Elphaba scowled in confusion and rising sudden fear. Nanny took a deep breath.
"Now don't be angry at Nanny. It's not Nanny's fault. Those soldiers suddenly decided that their exercises were finished. I don't know how. Maybe Noor told them you were gone. She told us. She'd been sneaking around looking for your broom, and she said you weren't here. So maybe she mentioned it to them. You know how nice they were to her, how they adored her. The soldiers came to the front door and said that they needed to escort the entire family, Sarima and her sisters, and Noor and Irji, back to their base camp, wherever it is. They didn't require me, they said, which was very insulting indeed, and I let them know as much. Sarima asked why, and that nice commander, Cherrystone, said that it was for their own protection. In case a fighting battalion comes through, he said, it won't do to have any members of the ruling family still here, or there might be a bloody incident.
Coming through? A battalion? When? Elfie hit the windowsill with her open palm.
I'm trying to tell you. No time soon, he said. This is just advance planning. They became insistent. Those soldiers scattered the peasants in the village. I don't think there was any killing. It all seemed quite humane, except for the chains. And only I was left behind, being too old to march down a mountain, and no relation besides. Also, they left Lear, since he was no threat, and I think they'd become fond of him. But a few days later, Lear disappeared too.
I'm sure he was desperately lonely for them, and he must have followed them to their camp.
And nobody protested? Shrieked Elfie.
Don't yell at me. Of course they protested. Well, Sarima fell in a heap, fainting dead away, and Irgi and Nor looked after her. But the sisters, that mealy-mouthed lot,